Away ran Joe, and Mrs. March gently told Meg Mr. Brooks' real feelings. "Now, dear, what are your own? Do you love him enough to wait till he can make a home for you? Or will you keep yourself quite free for the present?"
"I've been so scared and worried. I don't want to have anything to do with lovers for a long while, perhaps never," answered Meg petulantly. "If John doesn't know anything about this nonsense, don't tell him, and make Joe and Laurie hold their tongues. I won't be deceived and plagued and made a fool of. It's a shame."
Seeing that Meg's usually gentle temper was roused, and her pride hurt by this mischievous joke, Mrs. March soothed her by promises of entire silence and great discretion for the future. The instant Laurie's step was heard in the hall, Meg fled into the study, and Mrs. March received the culprit alone. Joe had not told him why he was wanted, fearing he wouldn't come, but he knew the minute he saw Mrs. March's face, and stood twirling his hat with a guilty air, which convicted him at once. Joe was dismissed, but chose to march up and down the hall like a sentinel, having some fear that the prisoner might bolt. The sound of voices in the parlour rose and fell for half an hour. But what happened during that interview the girls never knew. When they were called in, Laurie was standing by their mother with such a penitent face that Joe forgave him on the spot, but did not think it wise to betray the fact. Meg received his humble apology, and was much comforted by the assurance that Brooke knew nothing of the joke. "I'll never tell him to my dying day. Wild horses shan't drag it out of me. So you'll forgive me, Meg, and I'll do anything to show how out and out sorry I am," he added, looking very much ashamed of himself. "I'll try, but it was a very ungentlemanly thing to do." "I didn't think you could be so sly and malicious, Laurie," replied Meg, trying to hide her maidenly confusion under a gravely reproachful air. "It was altogether abominable, and I don't deserve to be spoken to for a month, but you will, though, won't you?" And Laurie folded his hands together with such an imploring gesture, as he spoke in his irresistibly persuasive tone, that it was impossible to frown upon him in spite of his scandalous behaviour. Meg pardoned him, and Mrs. March's grave face relaxed, in spite of her efforts to keep sober, when she heard him declare that he would atone for his sins by all sorts of penances, and abase himself like a worm before the injured damsel. Joe stood aloof, meanwhile, trying to harden her heart against him, and succeeding only in primming up her face into an expression of entire disapprobation. Laurie looked at her once or twice, but as she showed no sign of relenting, he felt injured, and turned his back on her till the others were done with him, when he made her a low bow and walked off without a word. As soon as he had gone, she wished she had been more forgiving, and when Meg and her mother went upstairs, she felt lonely and longed for Teddy. After resisting for some time, she yielded to the impulse, and, armed with a book to return, went over to the big house. "Is Mr. Lawrence in?" asked Joe of a housemaid who was coming downstairs.
"Yes, miss, but I don't believe he's seeable just yet."
"Why not? Is he ill?"
"La, no, miss, but he's had a scene with Mr. Laurie, who is in one of his tantrums about something, which vexes the old gentleman, so I dursn't go nigh him."
"Where is Laurie?"
"Shut up in his room, and he won't answer, though I've been a-tapping. I don't know what's to become of the dinner, for it's ready and there's no one to eat it."
"I'll go and see what the matter is. I'm not afraid of either of them." Up went Joe, and knocked smartly on the door of Laurie's little study.
"Stop that, or I'll open the door and make you," called out the young gentleman in a threatening tone. Joe immediately knocked again. The door flew open, and in she bounced before Laurie could recover from his surprise. Seeing that he really was out of temper, Joe, who knew how to manage him, assumed a contrite expression, and going artistically down upon her knees, said meekly, "Please forgive me for being so cross. I came to make it up, and can't go away till I have."
"It's all right. Get up and don't be a goose, Joe," was the cavalier reply to her petition.
"Thank you, I will. Could I ask what's the matter? You don't look exactly easy in your mind.
I've been shaken, and I won't bear it, growled Laurie indignantly.
Who did it? Demanded Joe.
Grandfather. If it had been anyone else, I'd have...
And the injured youth finished his sentence by an energetic gesture of the right arm.
That's nothing. I often shake you, and you don't mind, said Joe soothingly.
Pooh, you're a girl, and it's fun.
But I'll allow no man to shake me.
I don't think anyone would care to try it if you looked as much like a thundercloud as you do now.
Why were you treated so?
Just because I wouldn't say what your mother wanted me for.
I'd promised not to tell. And, of course, I wasn't going to break my word.
Couldn't you satisfy your grandpa in any other way?
No, he would have the truth, the whole truth and nothing but the truth. I'd have told my part of the scrape, if I could, without bringing Meg in. As I couldn't, I held my tongue, and bore the scolding till the old gentleman collared me. Then I got angry and bolted, for fear I should forget myself.
It wasn't nice. But he's sorry, I know, so go down and make up. I'll help you.
Hanged if I do. I'm not going to be lectured and pummeled by everyone, just for a bit of a frolic. I was sorry about Meg, and begged pardon like a man. But I won't do it again, when I wasn't in the wrong.
He didn't know that.
He ought to trust me, and not act as if I was a baby. It's no use, Joe. He's got to learn that I'm able to take care of myself, and don't need anyone's apron string to hold on by.
What pepper pots you are, sighed Joe. How do you mean to settle this affair?
Well, he ought to beg pardon. And believe me when I say I can't tell him what the fuss is about.
Bless you, he won't do that.
I won't go down till he does.
Now, Teddy, be sensible. Let it pass, and I'll explain what I can. You can't stay here, so what's the use of being melodramatic?
I don't intend to stay here long, anyway. I'll slip off and take a journey somewhere. And when Grandpa misses me, he'll come round fast enough.
I dare say, but you ought not to go and worry him.
Don't preach. I'll go to Washington and see Brooke. It's gay there, and I'll enjoy myself after the troubles.
What fun you'd have. I wish I could run off, too, said Joe, forgetting her part of mentor in lively visions of martial life at the Capitol.
Come on, then. Why not?
You go and surprise your father, and I'll stir up old Brooke.
It would be a glorious joke.
Let's do it, Joe. We'll leave a letter saying we are all right, and trot off at once.
I've got money enough. It will do you good. And be no harm, as you go to your father.
For a moment Joe looked as if she would agree. For wild as the plan was, it just suited her. She was tired of care and confinement, longed for change, and thoughts of her father blended temptingly with the novel charms of camps and hospitals, liberty and fun. Her eyes kindled as they turned wistfully toward the window, but they fell on the old house opposite, and she shook her head with sorrowful decision.
If I was a boy, we'd run away together and have a capital time. But as I'm a miserable girl, I must be proper and stop at home.
Don't tempt me, Teddy. It's a crazy plan.
That's the fun of it, began Laurie, who had got a willful fit on him and was possessed to break out of bounds in some way.
Hold your tongue, cried Joe, covering her ears.
Prunes and prisms are my doom, and I may as well make up my mind to it. I came here to moralize, not to hear about things that make me skip to think of.
I know Meg would wet blanket such a proposal, but I thought you had more spirit, began Laurie insinuatingly.
Bad boy, be quiet. Sit down and think of your own sins. Don't go making me add to mine.
If I get your grandpa to apologize for the shaking, will you give up running away? Asked Joe seriously.
Yes, but you won't do it, answered Laurie, who wished to make up, but felt that his outraged dignity must be appeased first.
If I can manage the young one, I can the old one, muttered Joe as she walked away, leaving Laurie bent over a railroad map with his head propped up on both hands.
Come in!
And Mr. Lawrence's gruff voice sounded gruffer than ever, as Joe tapped at his door.
"'It's only me, sir. Come to return a book,' she said blandly, as she entered. "'Want any more?' asked the old gentleman,
looking grim and vexed, but trying not to show it.
"'Yes, please. I like old Sam so well, I think I'll try the second volume,' returned Joe, hoping to propitiate him by